hourglass economy takes shape.
Strong at the top and the bottom, squeezed in the middle.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from our website, marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, September 28th.
Coming up, why record earnings at one American company might not be the best thing for the American economy.
How are Greek people and businesses reacting to the newest tax there?
OnStar puts the brakes on a new policy after sparking consumer outrage.
And the star of Two and a Half Men is in trouble. Oh, but it's not Charlie Sheen.
Not this time. No. Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
Record sales and record earnings. You don't hear that much these days, Steve, but
No. It's
the headline this morning from Family Dollar, which just released its quarterly earnings.
And you know, the company is benefiting from a growing number of Americans who are in the mood for a discount. And interestingly, at the other end of the retail spectrum, high-end stores are also doing pretty well, which brings us to the hourglass economy. And Marketplace's Adrian Hill.
The middle class is getting squeezed, which means mid-priced retail is getting squeezed right along with it. David Szymanski is dean of the University of Cincinnati's Carl Linder College of Business.
You have a very cautious, very concerned consumer who's really looking to the bottom end of retailing in terms of purchasing products.
And holiday retail jobs will follow that demand.
Probably the strongest area are the big discounters.
John Challenger heads the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. He thinks holiday shopping and hiring will have an hourglass shape. There will be spending and jobs at the low end. Luxury retail, too. He expects high-end stores will add some holiday staffers, as big money spenders aren't being hit as hard by this economic downturn. But
middle-end retailers, department stores, are the ones who seem to be taking it on the chin.
It seems going into the economic downturn's fourth holiday season, there may be another lump of coal for the middle. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Amazon has unveiled its new e-reader this morning, Steve. It's called the Kindle Fire. Kindle Fire. Yeah, get excited.
Yeah.
It's expected to be really more of a competitor, though, to the iPad and cost a lot less. It's going to cost $199.
Yeah.
But as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, it is all about the content.
Developer Eric Wise has created dozens of apps for the iPad, including Cowboys and Aliens, The Kids, an interactive book that teaches children how to read.
So you could swipe any of these words.
Wild.
If you hit it twice.
W-H.
It spells the word. iTunes sells the app for $2, pretty typical prices. Wise thinks Kindle users would be willing to spend more for apps like this that feel more like books.
Because they're already used to spending that kind of money on a device for a single book, they would buy an app, in most cases, for a premium.
At less than $300, analysts say Amazon's new Kindle could be the first serious competitor to the iPad. They predict Amazon may sell as many as 5 million devices by the end of the year.
What that means is that Amazon's application and content sales are going to explode.
Tech analyst Laura DiDio says that's where Amazon really makes its money, on books, music, films, and other content. The Kindle is mostly a delivery system. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The General Motors-owned OnStar car communication service that's designed to help drivers in an emergency. Well, they had a little emergency of their own last week. It said it would collect information on customer driving habits, things like speed and location, even if drivers canceled the OnStar service.
Well, now after consumer outrage, OnStar is hitting the brakes on that plan. For more, let's bring in our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, tell us how this controversy started.
Sure. Well, drivers know OnStar because it's a service you sign up for that can track your location and your speed, and it can help you out when you're in an accident or if there's another kind of an emergency, like a weather emergency. So what happened is OnStar said that it would continue to provide those services even if you canceled.
Hmm.
Well, that's a problem.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, there's been a lot of outcry over this. Is that why GM and OnStar decided to reverse course here?
Yes. I mean, it's creepy, not to put too fine a point on it. I talked to Chris Hufnagel. He's a law professor at the University of California at Berkeley. This is what he said about it.
new technologies enable all sorts of exciting features. But if these technologies are used a little differently by people with perhaps a malicious purpose, these technologies can really become implements of surveillance or control of individuals.
So what that tells us is that when something like this happens, it impacts how much consumers trust a company. It becomes very difficult to give them your money, to give them your service, if this is going to be the way that you're going to be treated in return. And it pulls the veil back on kind of the friendly face of a company. You see how the sausage is made, and it can freak people out.
Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, OnStar isn't the only company facing privacy concerns. Facebook is under pressure over the recent changes it's made to its site. Those changes make it easier for third parties to see user information and make it harder for users to opt out.
So what other companies are walking a fine line when it comes to privacy? For answers, let's bring in LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't have OnStar in my car, but I do have a cell phone in my pocket, and I assume that there are companies that would be more than happy, or maybe are already, using that data to sell to marketers.
Maybe are already? Oh, how naive you are. Look at the whole fracas with Apple recently, where tracking software was found in the iPad, the iPhone. It was fairly benign. It was helping with mapping services, but people just had kittens about that. It is extremely common. First of all, your wireless device is essentially broadcasting your whereabouts 24 hours a day. But a lot of new apps out there are really just bringing it down to the microscopic level so that they can bring services, offers, coupons, all sorts of things to you right where you are. And then when you go online, your whereabouts are constantly being tracked. Advertisers love that, and you have essentially no privacy when you're wandering around on the web.
Okay, well, is there anything that we consumers can do about that if we don't want to be tracked and have our information sold all over the place?
I don't want to say there's nothing, but you've got to be very, very aggressive. You've got to scrounge through the privacy policies of all the various companies you interact with to see if you can opt out from them. Now, essentially, the rule of thumb is going to be if you are online or if you're using a wireless device, someone is going to be looking over your shoulder. It's the new reality. However, there is legislation in Congress that would have a do not tracking feature where you can opt out from being tracked. But even then, we really don't know who's gathering this information or how they're using it.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks a lot.
I'm watching you, Jeremy.
Well, we are looking out for you at marketplace.org. We've got consumer finance stuff. We've got the numbers, the Marketplace Pulse. It's all there.
It's all there. And, you know, if you haven't subscribed to those other podcasts, the Marketplace Money Podcast is a weekly show with Tess Vigeland all about consumer finance. Yep. Marketplace Index is our new show with David Brancaccio daily. And, of course, we've got our blogger at the website, Patty Hirsch, senior editor for Marketplace. And he's got a lot to say about all kinds of things in the economy.
He's awesome. And we're all there for you at marketplace.org.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace Global Perspective. In Brussels this morning, the head of the European Commission, José Manuel Barroso, delivered the European version of the State of the Union address. Now, I'm not sure, Steve, but I don't think he started off with the State of the Union is strong.
No.
The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us from London now to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about what Mr. Barroso has been saying this morning.
He has been telling us that the European Commission is now making a formal proposal for a tax on financial transactions, on trading in shares, bonds, and derivatives. That's something that's got quite a lot of support in continental Europe, but I think it's going to meet very substantial resistance in Britain. Another thing he's been talking about is the idea that the European Union, especially the Eurozone, needs to be more integrated in the way it runs its government finances, and in particular, that there needs to be a lot more discipline.
And that call for coordination, along with some of the ideas that we've been hearing, particularly that there should be more action from the European Central Bank, sort of like we've got more action from the Fed here in the United States, these things sort of sound like they've got a bit of an American handprint on them.
I think that's a very fair comment, and it's certainly the case that over the course of the last weekend, the Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was lobbying very hard to force some very decisive action to deal with the Eurozone crisis. And he does indeed see greater integration of government finances and making more use of the European Central Bank as an important part of that. It's just that there are very serious political obstacles from both the financially strong countries, Germany, and from some of those weaker ones like Greece.
Political obstacles, that rings a bell. The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker, thanks so much.
That's my pleasure.
European financial inspectors are back in Athens today after the Greek government passed a property tax. It has a lot of citizens and business leaders all over Greece upset. What could turn out to cost each household at least $1,000 a year. A lot of folks say they're not going to be able to pay that. But European leaders say the government must be able to take in more money in order for the country to avoid default. Konstantin Michalos is chairman of the Athens Chamber of Commerce and Industry. He's with us now from the capital city. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
Do these taxes affect businesses in Greece?
Absolutely, especially the one that was voted last night, the so-called property tax, which was, first of all, totally uncalled for, and secondly, private sector in Greece has taken the full burden of this recession ever since the government began this austerity program. That was the 11th taxation reform against the private sector over the last 18 months.
How does the country raise money then? I mean, it's buried in debt.
What we need now is less austerity and more stimulus. And unfortunately, both the government and the Troika don't realize that the recipe that they have been following over the last 2 years is incorrect. It's hitting against a brick wall. And unless we change very soon, I fear the worst.
Do you think Greece should stay in the Eurozone?
We fought very hard and sacrificed a great deal to become part of the European family, part of the Eurozone. And I think that this is an excellent opportunity for Europe to show a united front, for Germany, who is the leader of Europe in terms of economic indicators, to prove to the world that it's a more European Germany and a less Germanic Europe.
Konstantin Michalos with the Athens Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Sir, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Now the case of a man with no professional financial market experience who's been wowing the Brits with the things he's been saying about the European debt crisis. More from London and Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
In a national TV interview, Alessio Rastani described himself as a financial trader and gave this blunt opinion on the latest Euro rescue plan.
The big funds, the hedge funds, they don't buy this rescue plan. They know the market is toast.
He told viewers that government attempts to contain the euro crisis were futile and would fail.
The governments don't rule the world. Goldman Sachs rules the world.
And Rastani thrilled and appalled viewers with his casual amorality.
I go to bed every night, I dream of another recession. I dream of another moment like this. Why? Because our job is to make money from it.
The interview was an instant hit, an internet sensation. One expert said you must watch this if you want to understand how markets work. But Rastani is not the high-powered trader he appeared. He runs a small public speaking agency, which is reportedly losing money. He says trading is not his business, but a hobby. His overnight success as a financial pundit owes much to the complexity and the tedium of the Eurozone debt crisis. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In Green Bay, Wisconsin, Jeremy, home of the revered Packers,
yeah.
And their foam cheesehead wearing fans, I'm sure you've seen a few of those in your time, haven't you?
Yeah. Indeed.
A group of doctors wanted to advertise the health hazards of cheese. So they announced their billboard would feature the Grim Reaper wearing a Packers cheesehead. Packers fans were not very happy about this, and they lashed out. The maker of the foam wedge cheesehead hats themselves threatened to sue. The company threatened to sue these doctors, so they decided, the doctors, decided to black out the hat on the Grim Reaper's head on that billboard. And I'm thinking to myself, they're trying to warn against the health hazards of cheese? Maybe cheese is just bad for those doctors. Durable goods orders slipped 0.1%, which means companies are not scaling back investments in new equipment, but they are not also ramping them up either.
And that's where we'll start with Josh Brown of Fusion Analytics. He's with us from New York, as he is every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Josh, what do you make of these durable goods orders numbers?
you know, I think it's a bit of a non-event. A tenth of a percent drop is nothing to write home about, just like a tenth of a percent gain would be nothing to write home about. It's actually nice to see that we didn't fall off a cliff there, though, given how volatile markets have been.
Well, this gives us some sense of the manufacturing sector. What does it tell you about companies and what they're ordering and what the manufacturing sector looks like?
You know, the manufacturing sector was once such a major force in this country. In the 1970s, 25% of the workforce was in manufacturing. Now it's more like 10%. Hmm. So we're still producing a ton of goods, about $1.7 trillion a year, 40% more than China does. However, we're doing it with less employees, and that's what's so vexing.
Well, yesterday, our analyst Julie Neiman was telling us that since consumers aren't coming to the rescue of the economy and the housing sector isn't coming to the rescue, that it has to be manufacturing that drags us out. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure if anything drags us out. I think enough time goes by where the housing picture stops getting worse, people start to get jobs, manufacturing kicks in around the same time. We need a concerted amount of demand from a lot of different quarters, and unfortunately, that just looks like it's a ways out. It doesn't look like that's even a 2012 story.
Josh Brown of Fusion Analytics, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Boeing's first new 787 Dreamliner landed in Tokyo earlier today to take its place in the fleet of All Nippon Airways. The Dreamliner is 3 years late. They've been talking about it over and over and over again. It seems like forever. And that could be an indication of delays to come as Boeing and its European rival Airbus prepare to fill a record number of new orders for aircraft. From London, here's reporter Christopher Wirth.
Boeing and Airbus are fierce competitors. But at this factory in Scotland, wing sections for both companies' planes are hammered out side by side.
The two largest commercial aircraft companies are our biggest customers.
That's Conrad King of Spirit AeroSystems. It's a company that's just one piece of a global supply chain that Boeing and Airbus will depend on to churn out more planes, a lot more planes. This year alone, new orders have totaled over $90 billion.
It's one of, or if not the most critical issue facing our industry at this point in time, is how do we grow our production rates?
Airbus has publicly warned that that supply chain, which provides everything from jet engines to the overhead compartments for your carry-on bag, may not be able to ramp up production fast enough. Joseph Lampel, an aerospace expert at London's Cass Business School, says both Airbus and Boeing face serious bottlenecks. And he says a big reason is because manufacturers make parts for both companies.
For Airbus and Boeing, their supply chain overlaps so much that they come to the same supplier and basically make the same demands for components.
New aircraft like the 787 rely on cutting-edge materials such as lightweight carbon fiber. That means component suppliers have to secure financing for expensive new machinery. Graham Chisnell of the UK's Aerospace Trade Association says that's difficult when banks aren't lending.
That's one of the bottlenecks. Can these companies get the cash to actually fund the expansion that's necessary?
Back at Spirit AeroSystems factory, the company says it's on track to expand production just fine. Even then, airlines will have to wait years for the planes they've ordered. The backlog for the 787 Dreamliner, for example, is at 820 planes. If the airlines have to wait too long, they may start to cancel their orders in droves. In Scotland, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, the CBS show Two and a Half Men has gotten in the news a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
It scored huge ratings last week when it debuted its new season with a new star, Ashton Kutcher, in for Charlie Sheen. Well, Kutcher is already in a bit of trouble. In his first episode...
In the first week?
Yeah, he uses a laptop on the show, and on the back of the laptop are a bunch of stickers.
Yeah.
You know how people put stickers on the back of their laptop?
Yeah,
these are logos on his for various internet companies.
The laptop is like today's bag, right?
Exactly.
Like a gym bag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want to dress it up. Well, he's dressed it up with logos for Foursquare, Chegg, GroupMe, Hipmunk, and Flipboard. Now, what do all of those internet companies have in common?
Chegg?
Ashton Kutcher is an investor in all of them.
What?
Yes, he is an angel investor.
Placement.
And he decided to give himself a little bit of extra product placement there.
Sneaky guy.
Well, CBS figured it out. They are pulling the plug on the stickers. They will be obscured for all future episodes. But that still does not answer the big question in my mind, which is, what in the world are Chegg, GroupMe, Hipmunk, and Flipboard?
No, Chegg or Flipboard. I know nothing about this.
I've got to get on the internet more,
I guess. I'm in my 40s. Why would I know any of that? So,
in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.